on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, March 31st, 2025 edition, and welcome to the end of the first quarter. It is behind us, and we are going to look back at the first quarter and see what parts of the markets did well, what didn't do well. Obviously, more didn't do well than less, but this is an interesting time. We have the Trump tariffs announcement that should come in on Wednesday and market reaction to that. But these are all short-term aspects to deal with. What we are here is more medium and long-term, helping you become a better investor, understanding what to pay attention to and what to throw out as junk headlines. And the best way we do that is by answering your finance and investment questions and helping you frame your mind around making those decisions. And when you call and leave your question, you help others because other people probably have similar questions and they can learn as well. So don't hesitate to reach out and give us a call at 888-99-CHART. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics, but let's tackle this caller question first.
Hey, this is James from Georgia. I got a lead from Tip Ranks. Every now and then I get notifications. It's telling me, it's advising, it's a good time to possibly consider buying Nucor Corporation, N-U-E. It's been going down, and it's a steel company. I was curious if you could please take a look at this stock. Appreciate it. Love the show. Thanks, guys.
All right, looking at Nucor, and has been in a downtrend. It peaked out around $200 per share back about a year ago, and now it's at $120 per share, so down about 40% from its high. So clearly not doing well from a performance perspective, but as I've said this before, there's a couple of domestic steel producers that warrant investment if you're ever looking to get exposure to steel. And Nucor is one of them. It's one of the better run ones out there. Now, does that mean you buy it just because it's the best in the industry? No, there are always headwinds to various industries that you should sidestep in times like this over the last year, for example. Now, Trump is talking about tariffs and how much that's going to help Nucor. Obviously, the market's not feeling that it will help Nucor very much because of that downtrend. Now, what I will say is the downward momentum is abating a bit. There are some signs on the chart that, you know, this could be close to a bottom. But it's not enough for me. It's too minor of a signal and doesn't get me really excited about it. And mainly it's because earnings supposed to fall 28% this year to $7.81. And next quarter, revenues are supposed to fall 11%, earnings 77%. But there is a potential rebound in the back half of the year. So something I'd have to keep an eye on to see if we can break above. Let's see. We can break above the 100-day, and especially that 200-day moving average. 100-day right now is at about 133, and the 200-day is up about 140. If we can break above that, then this downtrend has clearly ended. And then I might jump on board. But obviously with an economic slowdown that looks to be accelerating, the demand for steel tends to abate. And I would be patient on it. I would pass on it for now, but keep an eye on it for a potential trend shift. Thanks for the call. Now, Now, as you've heard, our second annual InvestTalk Market Madness competition is going on right now, and someone is going to win $1,000 by scoring the most points. And as we get deeper into this competition, each round matters more. So this was an interesting result for today, and it was an old economy, and it was all about oil, pretty much. You had Marathon going up against Antero Resources, and Antero is a natural gas producer, and it outperformed today. So that advanced, as well as Magnolia Oil outperforming Flowserv, an industrial name. So oil for the oil matchup to end the old economy, actually natural gas versus oil. Antero's natural gas and Magnolia Oil is your traditional oil company. And so those two will match up for the chance to advance to the final four next week. There we go. So that was the InvestTalk Market Madness, but we have a lot to cover over the next 45 minutes. And our main focus point is about the recession odds. And it looks like over the weekend, Goldman Sachs has raised their recession odds. Usually they're late to the game, and you know, maybe they're ahead of it now. Certainly it's not priced in that there will be a recession, but definitely increasing odds. So we'll talk about what are the factors driving their change in sentiment. Okay. We also have some other topics on the docket. One is in regards to the performance for different asset classes in the first quarter. Now that we're through the first quarter, let's go back and review and see what sectors, companies did well and didn't. And then we'll also get to European ownership of U.S. assets. And I think an underappreciated aspect of this sell-off is Europe disentangling themselves to a degree with the United States. And that could accelerate things to the downside in the markets. So we'll talk about those, as well as questions that came in via our voice bank, and that is on Treasury bills and American Express. And of course, comments, questions in the comment section over on our YouTube channel. We'll get to those as well. But most importantly, will be your live calls at 888-99-CHART. We're going to head to a break, and on the other side, we'll touch on today's market activity and play more of your questions here on InvestTalk. And my phone lines are open, waiting for your finance and investment questions at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is made better when listeners add their voices.
My name is Robert, and I'm from Florida. Great show. I learned so much from just listening to you.
Hi, this is Susan from New Jersey. I'm calling about AXOA.
How much of the information that came out today on the whole AI play with DeepSeek and all that, how much of that information can you really trust?
And Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are always ready to provide unbiased answers.
I am very much a person that does not trust Chinese data.
Net income is growing and margins are staying pretty steady.
Now let's go take a live call. Paul from Palm Desert.
Let's go to George from San Mateo, who has a question about index funds.
Tell your friends, live a little, live a little. Call InvestTalk weekdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time.
Is that a good strategy, or should I be looking at other things?
888-99-CHART. The numbers are in. InvestTalk downloads have now surpassed 61 million. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero provide unbiased answers to your finance and investment questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now let's take a look at the market today for March 31st as we ended the quarter. And it was a green day, but we did not start off that way. We were definitely in the red, deep in the red, earlier in the day to start the day. And it was really around there's what's called the JP Morgan put caller. Basically, this is an option, a huge option position that expires at the end today. And when you get into option expiration, there can be some shenanigans, shall we say. And it was not shocking to see there be a rally in equities today. Now, will we get some follow through tomorrow? I think that would be a giant question. And more importantly, on Wednesday, when we get the Trump tariff announcement and get more details there. But overall today, it was the NASDAQ actually still ended down 2.9 points, 0.02%. So very minor down day there. S&P was up a little over 0.5%. But you still had the Mag 7 lagging. Only Apple and Google were higher of the Mag 7. And really, Apple, the only one in earnest, up 1.94%. Google up 0.2%. But NVIDIA down over 1%. Microsoft nearly 1%. Amazon over 1%. And Tesla down 1.67%. But you had some other sectors still doing very, very well. Walmart up 3%. The banks, big banks, were up nicely. Wells Fargo up 1.5% there. Consumer staples continue to do well. Energy continues to do well. Industrials continue to do well. So definitely a market that is not very, it's very volatile in both directions. You get big sell-offs, especially overnight, and then you get rallies throughout the day. And that's not uncommon in a downtrend. You get big rallies and big sell-offs. Volatility just tends to trend higher. And that was really the market today. You had gold continuing to close at a new all-time high, up 1.2% on the day. You had treasuries a bit higher on lower rates. The dollar up 0.1%, so no big movement there. But WTI up 3.1%. So it should not shock you that that you had energy strong, and that was one of the strongest sectors for today. Now, one of the meat reasons for the higher oil was hawkish comments from the White House around Russia and Iran. On Iran, it's obviously the Houthi situation, everything's gone with Israel and all of that. But on the on the Russia side, he's obviously trying to come to a deal. He's put pressure on Ukraine to come to the table and hash out a deal. And he's at least so far, it seems, been successful at doing that. But he has not been successful at truly getting the Russians to the table. And he wants to up sanctions there, which would mainly be driven. The only way they can really do it is stop doing business with countries that do business with Russia. So think of India, for example. Will India choose to continue to import cheap Russian oil or do business with America? You know, I think that's one lever that he would pull, but that would drastically increase oil prices, and you're starting to see the market price in that. So that was the market for the day. March PMI, Chicago PMI, that was up 2 points to 47.7 versus consensus at 44.1. So anything below 50 is shrinkage. So yes, it was better than expected, but still below 50 and not looking too hot on that front. And you continue to see expectations for the economy to weaken as we move along with more uncertainty surrounding the Trump tariff. So that was the market for today. Now let's go take a live call. James from New York looking at Opera, O-P-R-A.
Looking at this small cap name, trying to get some exposure in the communications sector, and looking at this as maybe a buying opportunity, or would it be better to wait until it's a little cheaper?
So we actually own Opera for our clients. It's a small position, but it's definitely a name that has been on our radar. For everyone else out there, what Opera does is they make a browser that has some interesting features surrounding gaming. It's a very efficient for gaming, as well as it has some built-in cryptocurrency features and where you can log in another country. VPN. There we go. VPN. So it has some very interesting features to it. This isn't a huge company, $1.4 billion market cap, but cash flow is $78 million trailing 12 months and trending higher. So we like that. Return equity around 18%, net cash on its balance sheet, so no long-term debt there. And it's taking its cash flow, and it has been buying back shares. So we like that. And if you look at its earnings for next year, it's supposed to be $1.31, and it's about a $16 stock now. So you're talking about trading the low teens multiple. Well, last quarter, revenues were up 29%, earnings were up 17%. So you're paying a pretty low multiple for pretty strong growth and a great balance sheet and great profitability and a product that is in the wheelhouse of some good long-term secular trends around security, around cryptocurrency, around gaming. And so that's why we like Opera. And yeah, we think on the pullback, it's a good buying opportunity. Thanks for the call, James. Now we're moving to a break. Still to come, my focus point, more answers to your voice bank questions. And of course, you can call me now live at 888-99-CHART.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Our main focus point today is about how Goldman Sachs has upped their recession odds from 20% just a couple months ago to now 35%. And they're blaming things like a tax-like impact, meaning they're saying that tariffs are a tax on the public. And they're saying it's a tax-like impact on real disposable income and consumer spending. And then on top of that, they're saying, hey, this is also unnerving markets and tightening financial conditions because of this uncertainty. Good example is the average company is going to hire less, going to invest less due to this uncertainty and how that impacts the broader economy and their business. And that means banks are likely to lend less as well because they'll have the same type of trepidations. And so that tightens financial conditions. And lastly, they talk about what I just said, which is the lack of investment. I always cite this formula, C plus I plus G plus X. That's the formula for GDP. Too many people focus on the C, which is the consumer, which is the majority of the contribution to the GDP. So very fair. But I and G are very important as well. And I is investment. By corporations in plant, property, and equipment. And they're going to invest less when there is uncertainty. And so when people say the market doesn't like uncertainty, it's actually businesses don't like uncertainty. So clearly this is a negative for businesses. Now, President Trump has said he plans to raise the unusual a specific amount of $600 to $1 trillion over the next year in tariffs. And that implies the tariffs will be anywhere from 18 to 30% of current import volumes. Now, naturally, if you raise the price of anything, which what a tariff does, there will be less volume. So it's probably going to be, if he's being accurate in his estimation, at the higher end of that range, because the volumes will drop. Now, what Goldman Sachs sees is the combined impact of fiscal, meaning DOGE cutting spending, immigration, meaning less labor coming into the country, and tariff policies will be estimated to subtract 1.2% from GDP over the next year. That's not small. We're not China. We can grow 5, 6, 7, 8%, and you cut 1%, it's still a nice, hefty clip. Our cruising rate on the economy is somewhere around 2% of growth. Now, they also, and I definitely agree with this, They do see a Fed rate cut in both July, September, and November. And it would not shock me to see even more. And then they also see the PCE, core PCE, personal consumption expenditures. This is the actual inflation gauge that the Fed cares about. They see that going up to 3.5% in the back half of the year. Their prior forecast was 3%. So what you see here is a stagflationary prognostication. And I have to say, I generally agree with this. It's hard to stomach not just the tariffs, but the uncertainty around the tariffs. You know, Trump's negotiation tactics, you could argue they work well in settings like negotiating real estate, but how well does it work in a dynamic economy where companies need to make dynamic decisions around investment and hiring? And it just mucks up the clarity of the economic future broadly and specific industries, because that's another aspect of this. It's some industries might get hit harder than others and likely will. Now, Trump has said he wants a brighter economic outlook by lowering the price of energy. Well, the saber rattling around Iran and Russia, not helping that clearly. Cutting taxes. They've talked about it, but there's really nothing concrete. And it doesn't seem to be on the front burner for them. And that would be clearly another aspect that would bring clarity for next year. So if I'm him, I'd be tackling that really fast. Now, he wants to also cut red tape. Now, you could argue with Doge, he's doing some of that. But, you know, those things are more at the margin than anything that really is transformative. And ultimately, this is all, there's theories that they're trying to weaken the economy so that they can lower interest rates and start to refinance the $6.7 trillion in U.S. debt that comes due over the next year or so. That's probably the best argument I see right now for the current path of the economy. Now we're heading to a break, but I'm ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
The InvestTalk Market Madness competition is underway, and whenever you want an update, you can head over to investtalk.com. And when you've got finance and investment questions, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Duncan from New York. Thank you for all that you do. I'm hoping that my question can actually help a lot of people on this podcast, because I'm actually now starting to focus on fixed income. I am looking actually into a treasury bill and the stock ticker GOLD. Now, with a treasury bill, after when I talked to a Fidelity advisor, they said that I should probably focus on a treasury bill rather than a corporate bond, because I will get state and federal tax. With U.S. Treasury, I only get federal tax. I just recently bought a bill for $1,000 that will give me a 4.3 yield. But I'm thinking whether I should continue doing that as I save money for another treasury bill, which I can only put in like $1,000 or more, or should I use some of the little cash to go into the GOLD stock? So overall, I'm kind of looking for more of like a fixed income portfolio within the next like couple of months. I will still build my stock portfolio, dollar cost averaging, but wanted to get your 2 cents on, you know, the treasury bill 1 month that I bought and try to stack up on top of that, or kind of diversify to the gold stock. Thank you very much and have a good day.
All right. Well, I'm pretty sure you said GOLD, which is the Barrett Gold. Okay. I think you called it an ETF, but it's not. It's a company, Barrett Gold. Now there's GLD, which is the gold ETF, and two are obviously very correlated to gold price, GLD being gold. But obviously, Barrick has more upside and more risk. So getting more exposure to gold, I still think, is a good thing. I don't know how much other gold you have. So I would say you probably want at least some. And once again, if you want to take a lot of risk, that's GOLD. And then there's, you know, medium risk, that's GLD. On the Treasury side, yeah, if you are in a high tax bracket, you live in a high tax state, Treasuries are nice because they are state tax free. That's a good thing. Whereas corporate bonds, you're going to be taxed both on the federal level and the state level. And right now, the credit spreads on corporate bonds are not that wide to make it as attractive. Now, they're getting wider, they're getting more attractive. I mean, they won't be in the next 3, 6, 9, 12 months. But right now, we're just starting the credit spread widening. And ultimately, that means, you know, treasuries are not a bad place to be, especially bills, short term, very little risk. But know that, you know, if the Fed cuts rates, that once that bill matures, it's going to be at a lower rate, most likely. I talked about before how Goldman Sachs has 3 cuts this year. I think that's probably a good bet, maybe even more, depending on how the year evolves. But when you you go and reinvest that bill when it comes due, you might be getting a lower rate. So understand that as well. So maybe a little bit of duration might make sense, going out a year or 2 years, something like that, wouldn't be a bad idea. So overall, this is a question we usually talk about on a portfolio review. So if you want to schedule one of those, but I like short-term treasuries right now, but I do love gold even more, especially if you don't have any exposure. Let's go talk about the latest update from our, we already did the Market Madness update. So let's actually review the returns for this quarter. Quarter is now over, Q1, and it was quite the quarter. Overall, you had, let me pull up this stat. There we go. You had the S&P 500 down 2.9%. Okay. Actually, no. Yeah, 2.9%. The Mag 7 down 12.27%. Bitcoin down 6.6%. And the dollar index down 3.8%. What were the best asset classes? Well, European defense stocks up 38%. But if you're talking a more broad asset class, gold up 16%. Eurozone stocks overall up about 15%. Copper, 13%. And the FTSE 100, the UK stocks up nearly 10%, 9.75%. Even emerging market equities up 5% on the year so far. So this is a new market and sentiment is shifting. After years of everybody being excited about investing in US stocks, in AI trade, in cryptocurrencies, in risk on names. Clearly, the Trump administration has ushered in what we call a higher risk premium, meaning when you have that higher uncertainty, lack of clarity of both the economy and earnings going forward, the market will adjust. The multiples on stocks will adjust lower. And it's not a shock that the stocks that were trading at the highest multiples, a lot of those growthier and tech names, are getting hurt the most. Because, you know, to bring those multiples down, they have to go down more. The NASDAQ down 10.4% on the quarter. NVIDIA itself down almost 20%. Tesla down 36%. And even Apple and Microsoft, some of the strongest ones in the Mag 7, Meta has actually been the strongest. But that's actually starting to change as of late. But Apple and Microsoft, they were down about 10% for the quarter. Look at my other data here. Google down 19% in the quarter. Broadcom down 29%. So that whole bump around AI and how AI is going to drive chip demand, that has kind of fallen off. But certain companies have done very well. Berkshire Hathaway up 17% almost on the quarter. You had Philip Morris up 30% on the quarter, name that we've owned for a while for clients. Exxon up nearly 10% on the quarter. So there are places to hide, shall we say. You know, it's not the market throwing out everything. It's readjusting allocations, rebalancing. And something I'll talk about a little later, which is, I think the globe is rebalancing. And that's certainly underappreciated. And gold, as I said, it's up 18% so far this year, after being up 27% last year. So it's not like it's bouncing back from a rough year. It's just continuing its strength. And it's really about Chinese buying activity. It is continuing unabated. So that was a review of the first quarter performance for broader asset classes. I hope you've been telling your friends about our free podcast downloads and our YouTube channel, which you can find us in video form. You can see all my charts that I'm looking at and all the data. And we get questions submitted over there. So let's answer one of those now. Rowdy says, what do you guys think of Lulu after this drop? I know in the past you said it got away from you, but it's almost back to those price levels now. Yeah, this is an interesting one. We were looking at it, and it was right around 270, 275 in that range. And it started gaining strength, and it just kind of broke out away from us and went all the way up to about $420 per share late last year and kind of consolidated from there. But now it's rolled over once again, and we've been doing some deeper research. One of the reasons why we didn't actually pull the trigger on it was the fashion trends that we were watching, that the numbers looked good. The historical business of Lulu has always been very good in profitability. But think of the fashion trends of young men and women. Probably all know some young men and women around you, whether that's kids, grandkids, brothers, sisters, whatever, nieces and nephews. Are they typically wearing tight clothes or baggy clothes? I know for me, people that I know, it's usually baggy. Big sweatshirts, big pants, not really tight fitting athleisure wear. So what seems to me, until I see a shift in that, I worry that, you know, Lulu's time, while still probably a good business, there'll always be a demand for athleisure wear, and Lululemon might be still a place to turn for that, you know, for yoga apparel and workout apparel, et cetera. And I think there's some secular trends there. But your day-to-day, turning Lululemon into fashion, where, you know, women would just go shopping in Lululemon here. Not to the store, but just to go shopping in general, or to go run errands, or just day-to-day wear. It's becoming less popular. Not to say it's out, but definitely with the younger crowd, it's less popular. And so you're seeing earnings estimates for this year and next year coming down a bit. And overall, the trend in the stock didn't really break above anything that tells you that this downtrend isn't going to continue. So while it looked attractive down at 275, now it's back down to 283. Things have not gotten better over the last 6 months. In fact, they've gotten marginally worse. And so it's a name that we are interested in still, but not a name that I'm ready to pull the trigger on, because I just don't like the trends in earnings or the trends in fashion. Now let's keep things moving and dip back into the InvestTalk voice bank. You know the number at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Eric. Appreciate what you guys do every day. Question is about AXP, American Express. I've got a position in it, and it's had a recent pullback, and seems to have found some support, and I wanted your outlook for the next 6 months to 18 months on American Express. I'll be with them on the show. Thank you.
All right, looking at American Express. Great business. But some trends look pretty similar actually to Lululemon, what I just talked about. Similar multiple, trading around 20 times earnings, but estimates for this year and next year continue to come down. And American Express typically caters to the upper middle class and wealthy individual. And so their credit risk tends to be fairly low. And then they have the transaction network, very similar to Visa and MasterCard. So in many ways, it's kind of a hybrid type of business. And that yin and yang has worked very, very well throughout the years. So it's a fantastic business. Nothing against that. The question is, you go into recession and you have equity prices dropping, which is the source of so many wealthy people's wealth now, are they going to spend less? Are there going to be more defaults? The answer to that is probably yes on both. And so analysts continue to downgrade earnings for this year and next year. And the chart is starting to roll over. Now, is it better than, say, a Capital One, for example? Probably. But it doesn't inspire me. And if I look at the trends for the quarter, the trends for other big banks and credit card companies, it's not looking too hot. So I like it. It's a name that's on the watch list, but it's not something I would own right now because of the trends in the overall economy. Those can answer one more question that's submitted via our comment section on our YouTube channel. Kevin Perryman says, I've been hedging runs of US dollar strength and US equities with the Hang Seng and gold. While the reason behind US weakness and gold strength are evident, I don't understand why I've been seeing a negative correlation between Chinese indices and American indices. A negative correlation. Typically, even amongst short-term trends, they're more often positively correlated and both countries still have a significant trading relationship. Is this yet another short-term trend for 2025? Or is there another fundamental macroeconomic reason? I'll give you a simple reason. Decoupling. The path of U.S. policy is negative near-term for economic growth. We've been talking about that all show. Whereas in China, it's pretty clear that there is a floor that the Chinese Communist Party reached with economic growth last year, that they are doing everything in their power to keep the economy above. They're in outright deflation. It's minor, but it's still deflation. And they still have to engineer economic growth for their citizens. And so it seems to me like they are committed to turning the economy around in China in the short term, even if the long-term structural challenges are very difficult to overcome. So that's why you're seeing that inverse correlation. The U.S. economy is weakening. The Chinese economy is steady to slightly improving. And then you also get a situation where the U.S. market has done very, very well for a long time, and you're getting a better reversion to the mean. And the Chinese economy has just started to bottom early, middle of last year. And so not as many people own Chinese stocks as they had in the past. So there's more room for balance sheets and allocations to head higher in Chinese stocks and not a whole lot in U.S. stocks. So that's my explanation of why you're seeing that inverse correlation. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal each and every weekday that's helping you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Nima Saram. I'm a big fan of your guys' show. I'm a current student at Purdue University, and I wanted to get your guys' input on the general nuclear industry. I've recently invested in them a few months ago, and they've been pretty volatile, but wanted to hear your thoughts. Thank you.
Well, that's the nature of the material space, and a story that's going to take a while to really play out. You're going to get waves of optimism and pessimism. And if you're playing uranium, you're in the material space, which tends to be very volatile. And that's one thing most investors don't understand, is that even when a sector is doing well over the medium to long term, it doesn't mean it can't have its normal bout of volatility in the short term. They think that, oh, there's this long-term trend. It's in a long-term uptrend. I think of gold miners right now. They're doing well, but they still will have their bouts of 10, 15, 20% pullbacks, and it will spook people that aren't ready for that volatility. And so, yeah, nuclear's been a bit volatile as of late, but as long as you believe in the thesis, which I do, I think in general, those stocks in the space that are well run, that offer something of value, that aren't just your pie in the sky uranium miner junior miner that hasn't really produced anything, that's hoping to produce. Those are the things that I don't love. I love names that have production of uranium, that have technologies and capabilities to deploy nuclear facilities and small modular reactors and things like that. Those are the companies that you want to be invested in. So think bigger. Don't take the way out there risk. It usually doesn't work out, even though it may work out in the short term. It typically doesn't work out in the medium to long term. So keep looking, keep investing in that space. Also, make sure you're not overweight. Don't think it shouldn't be the only theme in your portfolio. There should be other themes as well. Thanks for the question, and good luck. Now, lastly, let's talk about foreign ownership of U.S. stocks. And that is what I think is happening right now. The U.S. markets, equity markets, have been hard to avoid by not just U.S. investors, but global investors. At the end of last year, 10 stocks made up nearly a quarter of the global total market capitalization in public equities. And 9 of those 10 names were U.S. stocks. And the U.S. makes up 64% of the value of all global stocks and 73% of developed markets. This is way beyond just your normal standard 2 deviation. This is in the 3 to 4 standard deviation level, meaning it's extreme over ownership of one asset class. Now, that's not to say that the U.S. won't still be the dominant market, or that U.S. will stop being a haven for entrepreneurship. But naturally, investors everywhere are overexposed to U.S. stocks. And then you add in a presidency that just a couple months in is already feeling volatile. Then that's creating volatility, despite your political leanings. And so a simple, smaller allocation to U.S. equities not just kind of makes sense, but it's good risk management at this point. And right now, European investors hold about $9 trillion in U.S. stocks at the end of last year. You want to guess what percentage? Think about what a percentage of that is in of your mind, of the total value of the U.S. market. Well, it's 17%. And that's about the total market capitalization of all European equities in Europe. Think about that. So they're more invested in our markets than they are in their own markets. Does that seem like that's something that will hold in an era of geopolitical volatility? Especially with what, Vice President Vance has said recently in a speech in Munich? Probably not. So that's an underrated aspect of what is happening here. It's a reallocation in my mind, of European assets back home into European stocks. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And if you need help better understanding your risk tolerance level, your portfolio allocation, and whether it meets your long-term goals, I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. And if you haven't optimized your 401k, we can help you do that as well. Just start over at investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.